o'clock. I'd like to call to meeting. Call to the order. Call the meeting to order. Personnel, Legislative, Public Affairs Subcommittee. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations, then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, directors will discuss the item and take action. We ask that the public not interrupt the discussion of action. Thank you. Quorum call.
Here.
Yeah.
Here.
Yes. Here. Adoption of agenda. May I get a motion?
I'll move.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I have proof of publication of this meeting notice. Item 6, review and recommendation of district affirmative action policy for 2022. Tracy Thompson and Kelly LaRance from Baird Home.
Good afternoon, directors. Tracy Thompson, district secretary, and Kelly LaRance from Baird Home. So for your consideration today is the review and recommendation of the district's 2022 affirmative action policy. The 2022 policy has no major changes from the policy approved last year, other than a date change and maybe some housekeeping. My memo highlights all actions taken to keep us in compliance with the AA policy, affirmative action policy, and all personnel actions that have occurred in 2021. I won't go through and read the whole thing. Chairman said you've all had a chance to read it. One thing I do want to highlight is within the personnel actions, we had three promotions within, well, we had one promotion within the district due to someone resigning. And we had three promotions. Let's see, two promotions due to retirement, and then two other retirements that brought in new people. So things are moving around here. So our recommendation is, and I'll answer questions after the recommendation. Staff recommends that the subcommittee recommends to the Board of Directors that the Papio Missouri River NRD's affirmative action policy for 2022 be adopted and incorporated into the district policy manual.
Can I get a second?
Second.
Okay, any public comment? Staff, directors, comments, questions?
I have a few
questions.
How many sexual harassment claims has the NRD had here? Have we had any?
Zero. That would be a legal question.
Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of any myself.
Have we ever had an incident with the LGBT community placing a complaint of any kind based on sexual orientation or gender identity?
Not that I'm aware of.
No. Has that been included? I noticed the sexual orientation and gender identity language. Has that been included in our policy manual for a number of years, or when was that included?
Didn't mean to be presumptuous by leaving the coat on. That language has been put in there for at least, I'm trying to think when the law required us to have it in there, but at least for the last 3 to 5 years.
Okay. Is that a statutory obligation of ours for all NRDs to have that language in there?
It is a statutory obligation for federal contractors.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Bonnet. Any other questions? Directors, comments? Roll call.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bonnet?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
And Shepherdson?
Yes. And with that, item 7, we are adjourned. 4:04.
Thank you.
Unless there's a request, thank you very much. Unless there's a request to use the bathroom or something, we'll move forward. Start the programs, projects, and operations subcommittee meeting, January 11, 2022. We've had a reading already from the prior committee regarding how the meeting will be conducted. Quorum call.
Here.
Jeff.
Here.
Sabrinsky.
This is PPO, is that?
Yes.
Here.
Here.
Teaser.
Here.
And Chairperson.
Here. Adoption of agenda, item number 4. We can have a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Sabinski?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Bodden?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Aye. Item number 6, presentation of Lower Platte River Basin Water Management Plan update. Paul Woodard and John Engel, HDR.
Good evening. We'll just be going through an update where the Lower Platte Basin Water Management Plan is at. And John Engel is going to go through the presentation. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. I'm going to go through an update on the Lower Platte Basin Coalition, and there's a few new faces. So today I'm going to provide a little bit of background on it. I think it's been maybe the winter of 2016 when I came before you and presented the initial plan that was adopted. That original plan called for a 5-year update, and so that's what we're here for today. So I'll provide some background. I'll provide some recommendations that the management committee has made for the second increment, the next 5 years of the plan, and then I'll talk about the next steps. So this group, the Lower Platte Basin Coalition, includes the Elkhorn, the Loup, and the Lower Platte Basins. It includes the Upper and Lower Loup NRD, the Upper and Lower Elkhorn NRD, Lower Platte North, Lower Platte South, the Papio, as well as the Department of Natural Resources. And this group got together, you know, in response to kind of a trifecta of things. One was the department had declared the basin fully appropriated in 2007 or 2008. I think the drought of 2012 raised some additional concerns about water usage within this basin. And then I think kind of an overall awareness of the struggles in the Upper Platte were the fully and over-appropriated basin and some of the regulations and difficulties they were having in managing their water resources spurred this group to get together and be proactive in their water management. So they formed a group. They developed a plan. This kind of gives you an idea of the scale of the basin and the NRDs within the Lower Platte. They got together, and the purpose of the original plan, and it remains today, was first of all, they wanted to develop and maintain a clear understanding of the uses and the supplies within the entire Lower Platte Basin. You can't manage what you can't measure or estimate, and so they wanted a good handle on the supplies and uses. They wanted to develop a plan that maintained a balance between those supplies and uses so that they didn't have to get into a case of having to offset depletions or increase regulation. So they wanted to responsibly manage new uses. And they wanted to do that in a way that protected existing surface and groundwater uses but still allowed some development to occur in a responsible fashion. And the intent of the basin-wide plan was then to inform all of the individual IMPs that each of the NRDs and the DNR enter into. So the original recommendation and actions that were included in the initial plan was one, a basin-wide accounting methodology was developed that was used to estimate supplies and uses within the watershed. It called for an annual meeting to discuss the activities and the uses and coordinate activities of the individual NRDs within the basin. And probably the most important part is that mouthful third bullet. It said an allowable development, and it said the cumulative development within the entire watershed during the first five-year increment will be limited to 10% of the annual excess during the peak season. And that's a mouthful. But essentially what that is we looked at the supplies and uses in June, July, and August when water supplies are at their most scarce. And we looked at the Louisville gauge, and we looked on average what's the balance every year. Do we have excess water? Or do supplies exceed demands or vice versa? And what we found was on average there's an excess supply. And we wanted to be responsible in allowing development in the first increment. We didn't want to race to the bottom. So we said we're going to take 10% of that excess that we have, and we're going to allow that for new development over this first increment and kind of ease into this, and it kind of ties into that responsible allowance of new development. And then we called for a five-year update of the plan to check in how we did during the first 5 years and set the allowable development for the next 5 years, and that's what I'm here to talk about tonight. So a little bit on that first increment development. We're using depletions during the peak season, and as I said, it provides a level of protection of the basin water supply. We aren't racing to the bottom, or we aren't racing to a fully appropriated status. It allows for planning beyond the five-year increment, and it allows for carryover of any unused allowable development to occur. So this is from the first plan. What we found is in that 25-year period, 1988 to 2012, that we looked at, on average, during June, July, and August, there was 188,000 acre-feet of excess supply in the basin. That means our supplies exceeded our demands during those 3 months, on average, 188,000 acre-feet. And we said we're going to take 10% of it. That's that 18,800 acre-feet, and that's what we're going to allow the entire watershed to develop, new development, new depletions to occur over this first 5 years. But that's kind of tough to manage on a basin-wide, so we broke it down to the Loop, the Elkhorn, and the Lower Platte. And you can see we did that 46%, 32%. That's a portion. The Loop Basin contributes 46% of the supply that shows up at Louisville. Likewise, the Elkhorn, 32%, and the Lower Platte, 22%. So we apportion that 18,000 acre-feet of allowable development by those percentages to the basins. The next thing we did to get to a level that can be managed at the NRD level is we split the apportionment for each of those river basins to each of the NRDs, and we did it by supply again. And you can see for this particular district, 21% of the Lower Platte portion of development was granted to the Papio NRD. A total of 870 acre-feet was this NRD's allowable development over the first increment. And we did a similar thing for the Upper Loop, the Lower Loop, Upper Elkhorn, etc. And so that's what was adopted by all the parties, and that was the first increment, and that's what this group's been operating on the first 5 years. That's the allowable development that occurred, or that could occur. And so what's considered new development? It's all uses in the hydrologically connected area. So that's new crop irrigation, and it includes both ground and surface water. These are total depletions. New industrial wells and uses, things like ethanol plants, the chicken farms that occurred. They have quite a few of those in the Lower Platte North NRD. Those all were accounted for in their depletive effects. New municipal uses, and one of the things to note is both MUD and Lincoln Water System have a water right for induced recharge, and that was already reflected in the demands that were used to account for that excess. So all the new development that you see that's served by the City of Lincoln, Lincoln Water System, that's already accounted for in the demand. Those aren't new demands. And then new depletions for reservoir evaporation and things like that also account for, are considered new development. And so the benefits of this plan is, you know, it provides a level of protection for existing uses. As I said, it's kind of a responsible allowance of new development to occur, but we're not getting our, you know, out over our skis during this first increment on new development. It provides a level of certainty and consistency. You know, one of the things, I've been going around to each of the NRDs and during the first time around as well, you know, and you go to the upper basin and they're concerned about all the water use and expansion of new uses in the lower basin, writing checks that they're, you know, that they're going to have to provide the backing for. And you get down here, and a lot of the concern down here is that the upper basins are going to add 100,000 new acres of depletions and deplete water supplies that reach the lower Platte. So coming to an agreement like this kind of provides some level of certainty to all parties on what each is going to be doing to ensure the water supply is sustainable. It also sets up some accounting, it encourages cooperation, and it's really a proactive approach, again, to avoid a fully appropriated status. So before I get to the second increment, this is just how things occurred during the first 5 years. That first column is the allowable new depletions that each NRD had at their disposal to allocate during the first 5 years. The second column is what they've actually used to date in the first five-year increment. And the third column is the remaining, and that's kind of that carryover we talked about. They will carry that amount over. It's not a use it or lose it. There's not a disincentive to save that. And you'll see that that comes up in the second increment. As a watershed, we had 18,800 acre-feet that we were going to allow for new development. During the first 5 years, each of the party, as a cumulative, allowed 4,400 new acre-feet of depletions, and 14,300 acre-feet remain that will be carried over into the next increment. So as part of this update effort, there were kind of three recommendations that came out of the management committee that I'm going to review with you. One of them was they went through a similar analysis that we did, again, looking at the supplies and uses at the Lewisville gauge. We've got 8 years. If you recall, we used that 88 to 2012 period. We've got eight more years of data to use. They went through the same process to determine what the allowable depletions would be. And then they considered maybe changing the timeline. Is 5 years too frequent? Is it not frequent enough? And I'll review each of those now. So the first thing is that 88 to 2012 period, as I said, we had 8 years more data available, and there was a couple options. One of them was just to add that to the previous and have 33 years of data. The other approach was maybe to drop off those first 8 years and stay with 25 years. And so there was a lot of discussion, and the recommendation ultimately was to use the 1996 to 2020 period, just use 25 years of data. And the primary reason for that is a lot of the new data has actual meter readings for usage on a lot of the irrigation. We're back in that 88 to 96. There was estimates of usage. A lot of the farming practices, conservation tillage, a lot of those things changed, and they felt that they wanted they didn't want that 8 years of maybe outdated data or maybe not representative of current conditions to skew it. So they utilized the most recent 25 years of data was their recommendation. And I will note, we did look at, we did a statistical analysis of both periods. What we wanted to make sure is that we had a statistically unbiased set of data. We didn't want to have, you know, two drought cycles and a wet cycle. And so we did an autocorrelation on the data to make sure that it was representative of normal conditions. So the recommendation was to use the 25-year period, 1996 to 2020 data. And that's what the information that I'm showing here is based on. Again, we did the same approach. We looked at June, July, August, total supplies in the watershed, total demands in the watershed, looking at the Lewisville gauge. And over that 25-year period, the average annual excess was 242,000. And so there's a couple reasons for that. You know, the previous one was 188,000 using the older data. And there's several reasons that likely account for that. One is, you know, 88, 89, 90, 91 was a pretty good drought period. And so we've dropped those off, and we don't have an equivalent drought period in the 2012 to 2020 period. I think the use of actual metered data, I think what we've seen throughout the state is our estimates of usage probably overestimate a little bit compared to what we see when we actually have metered data for irrigation. So our demands decreased a little bit. And then I think, as you're probably all aware, in the lower Platte, we've generally seen a trend of increasing stream flow over the last 20 to 30 years. So I think all that kind of factors into that. So we had 242,000 as an annual excess. As you recall, we had a carryover of 14,000 that we've already allocated, so we took that out. And that means our adjusted annual excess is 227,000 acre feet. We did the same thing. 10% of that we're going to allow for new development. That's that 22,800 acre feet. We partitioned it by supplies again, just as we did before, to the different basins. And then we allocated it to the NRDs, again, on supply. So what you'll see there is for each NRD, the new second increment amount, the Papio, Missouri, 1,053 acre feet. You've got your carryover amount from the first increment, the 772. So the new allowable depletion that you'll be managing to with the Department of Natural Resources is 1,825 acre feet for the next 5 years. And similarly for the other NRDs. And so that's what the recommendation of the management committee is to accept these amounts for allowable development, and each of the NRDs will update their integrated management plan with that information. The third item considered by the group was looking at the timeline for the next review and update. It's a lot of effort by the NRD staff, the department, and some costs for outside consultants to go through this process. And so there was discussion about, well, should we do this every 5 years? Should we do it every 10? And ultimately, the recommendation from the management committee is that we keep the five-year increment for now. Each year, the coalition board, each NRD has a representative on the coalition board. Each year when the coalition board meets, they have the ability that they could vote to push that off in another year or two, or to move it up. Some of the things that might trigger that is, you know, there's a new model being developed on the lower Platte River to determine the hydrologically connected area. So when that model's completed, they may want to update the information at that time. They may choose in 5 years from now, you know, there may still be a lot of allowable depletion yet, and the model's close, and they may choose to push it off a year. So we're going to add some plan language that gives them that ability to do that. But for now, we're going to stick with the five-year recommendation, and it'll be decided annually at the coalition board meeting. And then one of the things I always point out is even, you know, the overriding philosophy of the coalition was, and the findings and looking at supplies and uses, is in general we have a surplus of water. But there are those times every few years, typically late July, August, when there is a shortage in the lower Platte. And this is just an illustration. This is 2000 to 2013. And what you see there in that solid green line is the actual flows at the Ashland gauge. And on the y-axis is the acre feet per day. And what's highlighted in blue is that 1,000 acre-feet per day, 500 CFS. That's really where the city of Lincoln starts to have substantial impacts to their capacity. When flows in the Platte River drop below that, they start to have to implement restrictions to meet their full demands. And that's important because the city of Lincoln, with their surface water right, has there's about 100,000 acres in the Platte Basin that's junior to their right. So in the peak dry season, if they would place a call on the river, it would have some substantial regional economic impacts. And so it's a consideration that this group and part of the NRD is part of the drought consortium. And so this group said, we're going to deal predominantly with the average condition in the peak season, and then we're going to address those periods of severe drought through a drought planning exercise. But back to this graph, the green line is the actual flows at Ashland during those periods. And what I've done is, or actually the department did, is superimpose those dash lines. It's tough to see. There's a orange dash line that was the effects of the first increment's allowable depletion, what that would look like on the river. So you can see it decreases about 25 to 50 CFS, the flows at Ashland. The majority of time, there's no effect. But you can see over this 10, 13, 11-year period, there's three or four times where the city of Lincoln and their capacity is affected. The second line there is the effect of the new depletions. When those are fully developed, what their potential effect could be, again, 25 to 50 CFS impact at Ashland. So that's just, even though we generally have a surplus, there are those times that we need to be aware there are some shortages that do occur. So just to summarize the recommendations, the use of the 1996 to 2020 period for evaluating supplies and uses within the basin, an updated allowable depletions for each NRD that includes their first increment carryover, and then maintain the five-year increment for the plan review and update with plan language added to study appropriate triggers and give the coalition board the authority to adjust that five-year time period as conditions warrant. The next steps, the management committee met in November and approved these recommendations and then asked me to go present them to each of the boards to provide you the information, gather any input, questions, comments, concerns that you might have to myself today or to Paul or NRD staff. We're going to get together. We've talked about it at the legislative conference, but I know there's so many tag-on meetings that occur there. But in late January, we'll get back together. We'll hear the concerns, comments from each of the individual NRD boards. We'll finalize the second increment plan and update in February. The coalition board is scheduled to meet, I think, the second week in April. And at that time, they will meet to approve the interlocal agreement, which will include the second increment plan updates. Upon that approval in May timeframe, it'll come back before this board for ultimate approval. So I think that's all I had. We're not asking for any action today, just for your information on what's coming and to solicit any feedback or questions that you may have.
I have some questions. The management team, is that the directors of those NRDs, or is it staff?
It's generally, I think each NRD is a little bit different. I should have went into that. The coalition kind of has three levels. There's a technical committee. And so that's like Paul is a member of the technical committee. There's a management committee, and it's generally the general managers of the NRDs. And then there's the coalition board, which is usually a director of each of the NRDs.
And the basin as a whole is appropriated to what level?
Right now, it was back in the 2000s, it was designated as fully appropriated, but it was reversed.
In the entire basin?
The lower plat was, but that was reversed. So it's not over, it's not fully appropriated, which, you know, and that all that does is it, if the basin was designated, what it does, it limits the NRD's flexibility in addressing some of their water management issues. And it's a pretty big, you know, the issues in the upper plat has been over-appropriated, so they're having to put water back. A fully appropriated designation really just means you need to work closely with the DNR, and it restricts some of the ability of the NRDs to manage their water resources. So that's the main reason.
And you have to have the entirety of the basin.
Right.
And then trying to figure out how, even though there's low flows, Lincoln's portion was appropriated and grandfathered, that there would be so much available to appropriate. Certainly in the lower loop, it looked like it was 10 times more than in the Papio. Or did I see those numbers incorrectly?
Yeah, well, that's based on the supply, because the lower loop has so much supply. You know, they contribute about 50% of the water that shows up at Lewisville.
Here.
Comes from the loop basin. You know, it's groundwater fed. It flows year round.
It's not necessarily rain. It's mostly groundwater.
Right, right. And so, but it's a good point, and it kind of gets, you know, there are those periods of time. It's usually a week to 10 days. Every 3-4 years, it seems like, in the lower plat, where late July, early August, where we drop below that 1,000 CFS, you know, and where it starts to be a concern for Lincoln. They've got, you know, they rely upon the flows in the river to recharge their aquifer, and they have a metric that they, you know, their remaining operating volume within the aquifer, and they rely on that water to maintain that. And you know, an extended drought period affects them a lot more than these little blips that drop below.
Outside the municipalities and agriculture, what are the other major draws on the water usage that would be appropriated?
You know, those are probably the two major ones. There's some water-intensive industries, like ethanol, have a pretty
substantial... Ethanol, chicken plants, data centers.
Yeah, you know, Paul can attest, you know, when all those chicken plants came on, there was a tremendous amount of discussion in the technical committee about what's the consumptive use of a single chicken, you know, to try and calculate what they...
The processing, yeah.
Yeah, as they were projecting. But, yeah, data centers would be one that would, you know, if there was a new use that came on.
But do the data centers mostly buy their water from MED?
I believe the ones
and
that,
is that,
yeah. So they would be covered.
They subvert that.
Right. They're already covered under the existing demand.
And that doesn't pose a problem?
No.
That's all. Thanks.
Questions? Yeah. Directors? Director Teaser?
I guess it kind of bothers me when I learned that 20% of the water coming from the western part of the state on the Platte, you know, we're getting most of our water from the loop and from the Elkhorn. And, you know, so Big Mac really isn't providing us with much of anything down here. And when I go up Columbus in the summertime in August and I see just a trickle, I mean, everybody hits home. But going back to your first series, you had Lower Elkhorn 75% increase. And is most of that irrigation?
I think the 75% was that's the portion of their I'll have to look and see.
Or maybe I misunderstood that.
Yeah, I think 75% of the supplies from the Elkhorn Basin come from the Lower Elkhorn.
Okay.
And 25% comes from the Upper Elkhorn. They have a gauge that they installed at Tilden that we use to kind of measure where their supplies were coming from.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And that's predominantly because the that the upper Elkhorn, you know, they don't get a lot of runoff. They're kind of on the edge of the sandhills there, and where the lower Elkhorn has, you know, is a lot more runoff. They don't have the sandhills, so any rainfall events, so they have a lot more supply that occurs.
Director Bradley.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, hope you can hear me through my N95 mask. I had a couple questions. I guess, was this a lot of this calculation before the proposed new 4,000-acre lake? And, you know, might that, because I was understanding at the beginning of this, there's just so much allowed increment, five-year plan, this and that. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, so when a new use would come in, and you know, I talked about what new uses are. They're like irrigation, industrial uses. Mm-hmm. One of them is when in any of the NRDs within the watershed, when a reservoir, a surface water feature like that comes in, the depletions would be calculated based on what that would be. So, you know, on a reservoir, that would be the evaporation that would occur would be considered a new depletion.
Okay.
And what, you know, what's happened on throughout the watershed is you're also, in a lot of cases, that's crop ground. So you've got some portion of depletion and consumptive use that's occurring already. So it's the net of those two. If you can think about, you know, crops are evapotranspirating water continuously. It's being replaced by a reservoir that's evaporating water. And so it's the net of those two is what actually would account towards the depletions.
And I was thinking about, also you mentioned ethanol plants, and I don't, as of late, has the ethanol plants or construction of them slowed down, picked up, or decreased?
Yeah, I think in general it's probably decreased some since, okay, you know, 15 years ago. I think $7-$8 corn tends to put a damper on the ethanol profit margins. There are some that have expanded their existing operations and expanded their usage, and if they're applying for new wells, you know, that water use would be considered a new use for an expansion of their facility.
Yes. I know for a gallon of biofuel, X amount energy in for X amount of energy out. And they use a lot of water. And I was wondering, like, they may put a moratorium on the Republican River Valley for, because they're dry there, but yet the state's waving, you know, ethanol plants, come on and set up shop over here on the Platte. And I was wondering how they get away with that, but now it starts to make more sense, I see.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions? Director Jack?
Real briefly, in the paper recently, there was a large-scale reservoir being possibly proposed for the lower Platte area, like a 7-mile reservoir and so forth. They're going to dig it out and make a huge lake there. How would that affect this plan?
Well, it would be considered, you'd have to look at the existing land uses and what the, you know, the crop and its current use from a water budget standpoint, what the evapotranspiration is, compare that to what the evaporation is. If the evaporation is more than what the current land use is, that delta would be a new depletion.
Right. So I assume that would be the case. Thank you.
Sure. The evaporation of a reservoir in eastern Nebraska with, say, 80% humidity in the summer, is that I suppose it's such a large area that that's significant compared to the corn and the water they irrigate it with that's currently on that ground?
You know, it's close to a wash. I think it's a little bit more. It kind of depends on what the existing land use is. But, yeah, I mean, it's certainly different compared to, like, McConaughey. You know, the level of
drier.
Yeah, the level of depletion they have with their evaporations considerably more than what we have here.
That's very interesting. Is that presentation available on the website, or could you forward it to me?
Yeah.
Just so I can study. Well, that's very interesting. Thank you.
So just a quick note, the next steps, and Rich would attend the overall managers meeting of all the districts in the April time frame, or we would be there with him, but go through, and if they approve these recommendations, then an interlocal agreement comes back to the district to approve in, say, May or June.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Item number 7, review and recommendation on Little Papio inundation mapping. Lori Lassiter.
Good evening. See, this is my website.
You want to sit down?
Can I just have, or is the mouse connected there?
It's a wire.
Okay, I have a little demonstration for you here tonight. The USGS has developed a website and a mapping product that is a predictive inundation mapping. Now, we have the FEMA flood maps, but they show a snapshot in time, one condition of the 100-year flood. And so USGS has done this, has published this flood inundation mapper tool that allows us to predict exactly where flooding may occur in any given rain event. And I'll show you this. We do have some of this in the metro area right now. Our gauges aren't online in the winter, but we do have a stretch of the Big Papio that has this capability right now. But luckily for this presentation, but not so luckily for the people in Illinois, there is active flood warnings there. So I can show you how this kind of works in real time. So any of these triangles is a spot where there are gauges. And so as you can see here, there's a hydrograph of observed river stages on the White River. And this is the predicted stage. So it is coming down here right now. And if you look at the map, you can see the blue area now, and that is where they predict areas will flood. If you click on the blue areas, it'll also give you a range of what the expected water depth is at that given point. And one of the other cool things about this is, you know, if we were kind of towards the beginning and this hydrograph was going up and they predicted a stage would be higher, you can come over here and say it's going to be at 24 feet. And now this is what the inundation area looks like. And so, again, we can come in. If that's your house, you can click and see I'm expecting 2.5 to 3.5 feet of water. And then you can take appropriate action. And so I'll go out and show you. Now, the color scheme, one thing I wanted to say, the color scheme that we see here and the stages are the same that the National Weather Service uses on all of the gauges. So it is consistent. It is integrated with that service. So once our gauges come online in the spring, we'll see the same thing there. And so we've got this here.
How many different points will we have? Will we just have the one in Omaha, or will we have?
We have, I think, about 20 gauges total for flood warning. 21.
21. I would have been happy with 20.
So right now, the extent that we have available for this inundation mapping is on the Big Papio. From, I believe, is that Fort Street? Oh, it's no, above State Street. And we can go all the way down to Ralston here. And so, as you can see, you know, right now we don't have a flood warning, but I can go in if I know it's going to be that gauge height. Actually, let's go up. So you can see it increases as the gauge height goes up. And so we have that available right now. So tonight, before you, we have a proposal to do this same inundation mapping for the Little Papio. Okay, Bill, I'll let you take over here. And so we've got a stretch of the Little Papio that we want to expand this inundation tool to. So like I said, we have the flood warning gauges right now that give us the point in time or a prediction of where that flood is going to top out at. But, you know, the average person, if we tell them it's going to be at an elevation of 1122.8 feet, that doesn't necessarily mean much to the average homeowner. And what they would be able to do is go onto the map, click on a point, and see, I may be expecting 3 feet of water in my house. So if you can go to the map, please. So we've been on that, on the memo. Yeah. So we worked with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers through their Silver Jackets project to get some of the initial modeling done to implement this mapping in 2019, and they funded about $70,000 worth of modeling at no cost to the district, which is the base modeling that we need for this. And so we have a proposal from the USGS to cover this stretch of the little patio that you see there on the map. The total cost to get the model into the tool and to publish the tool is $100,400. And they are matching that. They are providing $30,900 in matching funds, which would leave a cost of $69,500 for the district to implement this tool on the website. It will be fully available to the public. And I also have Kellen Strau and Brenda Densmore with USGS are here if you have any technical questions. Other than that, I can answer any of your other questions.
Thank you. We can have a motion. We have a second.
Second. Or man.
Okay. Sorry.
Second. Okay, anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Director Thompson?
Now, where's the cost incurred? Where's the money going?
To the USGS.
So basically, their salaries were paying for?
Kellen, can you answer? Or Brenda?
I missed part of the question. Can you repeat it?
Please identify yourself for the record.
Oh. Kellen Strau, U.S. Geological Survey.
Our cost is $69,000, the total $100,400. What is that cost? Is that salary cost of USGS employees?
Some of it is salary. Some of it is cost that goes for the publication. But, yes, the majority is salary, minus what our portion that we get from Congress to match with local agencies. So our funding that comes in is what Congress gives us to do our work, and then we match that with local agencies to get the work done.
So it's going back to the feds?
What's that?
It's going back to federal government, or $69,000?
It goes, yeah, I mean, in a way, it pays our part of our salary minus what our match is. To do the work and to make the publication and to post it on the website.
Is this an appropriation that Congress gives you?
It's not really appropriation. It's a budget item.
It's in your budget.
Better, but what's that?
It's in your budget when you go to Congress.
It's an appropriation of the way they provide us with funding to do work that is relevant to local agencies as yourself, and so that it's making sure that, I don't know, Brenda, you have a better explanation on how our funding comes from Congress. But.
Well, I don't need a lesson on that. I've done it.
It's different than like a direct appropriation that is done for a certain project. It's done to cover more projects for the state instead of just a certain thing that's a line item in the budget.
So when you get our $69,000, it just goes back in your general revenue account or what?
No, it gets spent for this project.
On your salaries?
For salaries, for
right.
The publication.
So if we didn't do it, that doesn't affect your staffing, does it?
Yeah.
It does? You wouldn't have staff to do it?
My name is Brenda Densmore, and I'm with the USGS, so I'm our supervisor for our studies section. And yeah, so basically the way most of our budget works, right, is Congress says study this, here's your money to go do it. That happens with a lot of our biology centers and things like that. And it does happen some with water for some of our stream gauges that are fully federally funded across the state. But the water centers, they have this extra little bit of funding that basically Congress appropriates and says, this is to work with local entities, with state and local entities, so that you can provide the science that they need. And it's kind of a way to make sure, you know, we can apply those federal dollars to something that is useful to water managers in Nebraska. So, like, we don't spend that money unless we have match to match it with. So, like, say we wouldn't do, you know, if we have 50 different folks, the city of Lincoln and this NRD and another NRD who want different projects and want us to help with those projects, then, you know, our match on each of those gets smaller and smaller because we only have a certain pot of funding. But yes, it is, that pot of funding is appropriated. So that, it's called our cooperative match funding, and it hasn't been, you know, it hasn't been increased in years. So for local folks like yourself, if you, you know, if you want more money to put towards this project so we could pay for 50% of it, then
so that, you know, federal dollars. Ours is, what, 70%?
What is it? Yeah, I mean.
So if we were to say we can only afford 30%, you cover the 70, that wouldn't work?
If we had a big enough budget, yes.
Well, you know, your budget's bigger than ours, I can guarantee you that.
Well, I should know this, but we, you know, what we get in Nebraska for our little office in Nebraska, you know, we divvy between a number of different projects to help any water manager across the state of Nebraska. So, yeah, we to kind of keep it pretty consistent over the years. You know, it kind of fluctuates depending on what federal dollars we have coming, but, you know, it's like the 20 to 30% basically is what we can usually match and kind of evenly spread our federal dollars out across Nebraska.
But. Thank you.
Director Davidson.
Yeah, I could see how this could be a very useful product. Is this a one-time fee, and then is it on the website then forever, or... So we just pay the $69,000 one time, and then it's going to be on there for many years to come.
I'll let Colin.
And then you guys will provide the updates to that as it needs to be updated.
Yeah, for that site. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So, thank you.
If there's major changes within the basin that would affect that modeling, you know, say a new bridge is brought in or a reservoir is set right in the middle of the reach, then it would have to be updated, and that would be a separate project outside of this, because these things change. That'd be a whole new modeling effort.
Thank
you, Mr. Chairman. As I'm looking at the proposed area here, it includes Irvington. As I see three stations there, one of them is in my district.
Yes, so it basically starts at that USGS gauge near Irvington, mainly because of the reservoir upstream.
Okay.
That we wouldn't know the flow above that and the tributary that comes into it.
Oh yeah, and around that Irvington area, there's just development going up like you wouldn't believe. So all that impervious cover that you see, a lot of cement and rooftop and what have you, would increase the flow. You know, urban bank flooding for sure. And so I would certainly ask the committee to fully recommend this to the full board for Thursday. And it would be very, very useful, especially running right through the heart of the Omaha metropolitan area. And I see Coal Creek there, and some of you know better than I that been on this board for a long time or with the NRD, that August 2000 flood, you know, lost a life on that one. This is, should be very useful, and I wouldn't want to see the Papua, Missouri NRD sort of in the dark ages. I mean, I think we should be, you know, right there and let the public know, and especially a good interactive tool. That's what I got to say. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Director McCormick?
Do you have any numbers, feedback of people that use it?
Well, I do not have that with me. I can get it.
I'm sorry.
I believe I don't have it, you know.
But there is, I'm curious as to if no one knows about it, no one uses it,
right.
It's not really a great tool.
Right. And so that's something we can work with Lori as well on. It'd
be awesome if you find that out.
Yeah. I think they might have some Google Analytics on it.
And maybe what demographic or you know, because I'm guessing a lot of NRD people use it. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a major remodel or of the flood areas of the core coming soon. Does that affect your modeling or what you're putting in place now?
No. So this would this use the same base modeling that the new flood maps will use.
But the new maps aren't out, or?
We expect to have them February 17th.
And if we don't have them, will you continue with this modeling?
Yes.
Even though it's going to change as soon as they come out?
Yes. So this modeling will this modeling that we're using here, we believe, is the best available data to show flood risk in the area. So even if the FEMA maps are delayed, that does not affect this project. We would still want to use this model because the models on the current map were done sometime in the late 80s, early 90s. So we know that data is not necessarily valid at this point in time.
So what would affect the quality of this model to see?
So, like you mentioned, you know, if we build a reservoir or levees or flood walls or anything like that, that's going to majorly shift how the water dynamics in that area along the little patio. So, at this point in time, the only projects that I'm aware of are through the CORE, the GRR study, and those are still going to be several years out before we even would begin to start construction. So in the meantime, this could be very useful.
And development doesn't affect it, as you said, in Irvington?
Right. So we do have the data that shows what we call the full build-out condition.
Oh,
basically,
for the future, you projected that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I never put words in Director Thompson's mouth, but I think he's trying to say that our constituents have already paid for it. Congress got their money from us, but it is a targeted use. I'm guessing it's going to be a recurring cost, probably more than as being advertised, but I will also support it because it is probably a good tool. I'd like to see some advertising and better community knowledge of it, especially if there's a flood season coming, or you know, if there's any predictability or time that we can have that, I don't know if the media or whatever can communicate that to people that that's available for their use.
Well,
okay.
Weather services will help promote it too.
So. Yeah, exactly.
Put it on our social media pages will help a lot too. We'll go to that and find those kind.
It'll be on our website. So yeah.
But if you can, that'd be great information if the users currently the other you know. Not necessarily. Yeah, I guess the papio, let's stick with that. That's probably more accurate data. That's all, sir.
Any other questions from directors? Director Burnett?
So am I to understand that this tool is already developed, or are we still under development? I'm not really clear there.
So the tool itself is developed for gauges throughout the U.S., anything that was shown on that website, anywhere there's that little triangle. What we are doing is adding more data to the tool to expand the area where it's available.
How do we do that? Do we give the data to the USGS and they upload it, or is there an API that our staff will be able just to upload the necessary data and it automatically updates the site?
So we worked with the Army Corps of Engineers to do the base modeling. That will create the shape files, and then Kellen will work his magic because I don't understand website stuff. I understand water, and he'll get it on the map somehow. Yeah, and so there's a process that we have to go through to get the data in the stages it needs to be in.
think that's where we're getting at on the other side of the room with ongoing costs. If he's reassigned somewhere, is this going to be a permanent position or function of the USGS going forward? Or is this just a project that's going to be shelved?
So this stretch of the Little Papio is a single project. And like each other gauge has been a single project that has been done across different water centers throughout the U.S.
So it's just the Little Papio?
Yes. And so we are adding to what we started in 2015 on the Big Papio right now. And there may be areas where we have the opportunity to expand it in the future to other streams within the district. But the technology and the publication doesn't go away if Kellen accepts another job in another state. The Water Center would still have that capability, I would hope, to continue to do this work if we felt that we needed to do additional projects in the future or update projects we've already done.
Are there other features that are going to be added to this project, such as ice flow or water contamination alerts or anything else? Any other data points besides just inundation?
At this time, it's stuck mainly in inundation. It's been kind of gotten to the point where it is now, and it's kind of like not in a development mode anymore. It's pretty. But, I mean, there's always the opportunity to do more. They do more with gauge analysis and showing historical peaks on those other tabs within that. There's also the hazardous work that can be done that shows damage, number of expected damage to homes and that kind of stuff at different stages. So those are things that have been added that are available now, but I don't foresee a lot of big development on it in the future.
Any other questions? Director Davidson?
Just one more question. Is technology such as this available for the Missouri River already? I mean, because I've seen something similar to this when we follow the flood stages there in Bellevue. Is that already up and going, or is that something that's just a different?
I don't know if they have this particular inundation tool on the Missouri, but it's the same forecast that we get from the Weather Service at the gauges. They pull that forecast in to this tool. So in the event that we do have a rain event, there's nothing that the USGS does. It automatically pulls in those forecasts. And then you can go and see on that tab, the chart with the different colors, that's the same as the National Weather Service.
But they do the forecasting,
mm-hmm.
The Weather Service does that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just
one more comment. So perhaps in the future that, like they do with the tornadoes and the storms coming, you send it for your weather app, and this is my address. You can actually send alert to that cell phone's address or that area that you're going to be incurring floods. And maybe the USGS could get something like that set up.
Director Bradley?
Just last comment, too, and I can sort of see where Chairman Thompson's coming from. I understand, I almost think when I'm hearing Weather Service, NOAA should be maybe contributing some of this. But for what's right here before us now, I'm for it. But, yeah, I had something else to say, but what the heck. Hope you guys approve it.
Yes, I did. Question. Just technologically, comparing the current GIS technology that y'all use, is this similar to that, or could these functions be built out in our current GIS systems?
I'm sure it could be done, but I think the cost to do that would far exceed what we're paying here, because we just don't have it built right now. And so that staff time to get something like that up and running and available, I wouldn't even know where to guess how much that would cost.
Certainly would be worth a study.
Sorry, I wanted to follow up to your question. So, basically we have that built in. I mean, like when we share this social media-wise and stuff, we might have to give the user the little instructions. But, you click on your house, you say, oh, at a flood, at a stage, it's tied to the gauge, right? So you say, oh, the gauge is at this stage, my water is 2 feet deep in my house, they can go to that gauge and they can have it send them a text message when it gets to,
So you do have that within the app now that they can receive notification. But perhaps that would be something where it'd be life-saving, that, certainly through
it would have to be
Big
a little
Papio and the Little Papio, Cold Creek, those areas where lives are at risk when that big event comes, where there's an Amber Alert for it.
It's not like perfectly tied together. Nothing in the world is perfectly tied together, right? But so we would have to make sure we educate people on how to use it.
What I would like to see is that it knows this cell phone is in that area. You can say that cell phone is, because everybody has their locator on for the most time, and then or that cell phone, your home address is attached to this cell phone. That here's an alert that your property and your lives are in danger.
Maybe it's not as smooth as you picture.
It's coming. This is in the future.
I like that picture, but it's not like completely not working like that right now. It could, if we teach them how to use this website and then subscribe to the gauge data, we could get something similar, but not quite as pretty.
It's like
but
the full stop on the air space yesterday and the Amber Alert. Yeah. There's going to be glitches, but we should look forward.
Tim, the Weather Service and the emergency managers in the counties, like Douglas County, have a disaster alert system already. So it's just something that they do send out notifications of impending floods.
Just broad-based ones that are just...
It's called Alert Sense. You can download the app. It'll tell you if it's going to flood, the storm.
I'm looking at something that they don't have to download that it says it identifies that you're in that area.
It'll follow you.
From New Jersey and you're in that area. If
I'm in Kansas, I'll get an alert saying the location in Kansas I'm at may have a...
I meant the visitor from New Jersey that's in the area that may get decimated. That's...
Any other questions?
This is just a comment, but I'm following what he's saying. When I ran for this office back in 2012, I was able to geotag 1,400 homes that were either in the floodplain or flood fringe, including a couple schools, a couple power substations, 6 bridges, and other structures that would be affected. And we didn't have at the time any of these tools that I could reach out to my constituents and let them know, hey, you're not going to be flooded out, but you certainly are going to have a wet basement or something like that. Or even if I just needed to communicate the need for flood insurance or review of their HO6 condo policies or something. That seems to be the direction we're going, but this is the type of end user usage that we want to see from this data.
Roll call.
Sapinski?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Bonnet?
Yes.
Jack?
No.
And Chairperson?
Aye.
You up again, Lori?
I am.
Item number 8, review and recommendation on WP4 contract amendment with HDRA.
So if you remember, in 2017, we started with preliminary design of the 6 priority structures in the Papio watershed, one of those being WP4. HDR was selected to do the design on that structure in 2021, we then approved a final design contract to pick that back up, and so that we can move on with construction of this particular project. WP4 is located at 204th and Schramm Road in Gretna, and this is the concept plan that we had come up with on that preliminary design. And so we thought this was pretty good, and we were going to move forward, but we ran into a couple of unexpected items. The first being we needed some additional geotechnical borings based on recommendations or requirements, really, from the Nebraska Department of Natural Resources Dam Safety Office. It's a new test that they have not necessarily required on all dams before, so and that was a change from... that we found out about after the final design contract. So we had some extra expenses there. Additionally, the trail that we had planned was supposed to go up and connect to future Schramm Road, and it would be on the side there. And when we started looking into it a little bit more, this little trail piece right here would require several easements. It would conflict with several utilities, and it would also require a pretty extensive retaining wall to be able to fit between an existing stormwater structure and the stream. So we kind of started thinking, well, maybe that's not the best place for a trail. So we decided that we would move it downstream a little bit to about right here. And with that, we do have to put in a small pedestrian bridge, and that required some extra design costs. And so tonight we have before you a contract amendment with HCR to cover these extra costs. And the total amount of the amendment is $68,972, bringing the total contract to $3.5 million, which does include the preliminary designs for both Dam Site 12 and Dam Site 19, in addition to preliminary design, final design, and construction administration on WP4. Lori Corrett with HCR is here as well if you have any questions.
Thank you. We can have a motion.
Move the staff recommendation.
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Brett, me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I apologize for my long-windedness tonight. Just a question. So the required geotechnical tests, were they going to be required on all future projects, or was this just a one-time deal?
I believe they are. Lori, can you answer that?
Good evening, Directors. Lori Koretsuk with HDR. So the test that they wanted to do was for dispersion of clay material. And in the other Papio dams that we've done, we've never had dispersion soils that inhibit that showed dispersive characteristics. And so we had to go out there and take some additional tests for that soil, and a more advanced test than one that was just one that would characterize it, and then found out that those materials were not dispersive, and we're providing that information then to the DNR to let them know that there's no additional tests that would have to be done during construction for any dispersive materials, especially at this site.
And the additional pedestrian bridge is for design costs only, and will be in the construction cost.
Yes, yeah. And so we need a couple more abutments in that location because we didn't have any moorings for the abutments for that.
And they won't be at the order of the Fremont Bridge over UP.
No.
Okay.
It's a small single step.
That's all.
I hope not. Yeah. It's a very small bridge.
Any other questions from directors?
I have one question.
Director Burnett.
I was going to talk to you guys about this offline, but since you're standing there and we're talking about trails, all of these sites, you know, we put in a nice trail, but to alleviate the traffic, because during the summertime they often get congested with people on bikes, and maybe this is just you can comment on it at a later time, but I would love to see a single track off-trail dirt track to run in parallel with the pedestrian trail around these sites. I don't know how much additional cost that might add, if any, or additional engineering that might require, if any, but I would be interested to see that and interested in our NRD to include those in our future designs, if not on this site, on several others. I think it would alleviate a lot of the traffic, the hazard, and in light that Omaha has seen a 1,400% increase in bike sales just over the last 2 years, that might be something we should look
at. Yep. I will pass that along to Eric, as he's the trails expert. And I know he's always given me stuff on my projects here to try to improve it. So, yeah, we'll definitely look into that.
Thank you.
Other questions? Roll call.
Caesar?
Yes.
Bonnet?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Sapinski?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Aye. Item number 9, review and recommendation of Papio PL566 site S6 easement vacation for the WP2 project. Amanda Grant.
Hey, good evening. Oh, can we go to the map that was with the memo? There, that's good. Thank you.
So I think this is the third vacation, easement vacation we've done on this project. So this is WP2, located about 180th and Giles. I should say it will be W2. It's currently S6. It was a PL566 structure that was built in the 80s, I believe, early 80s. And so we have an existing site there that we maintain, and there were easements for that project. Now we're coming in, we're building WP2, just right basically on that embankment alignment. And so with all the development happening all around here, when they go to do their title work, we find out about all these easements that we've had in the area. So this one in particular is an easement that we had received in 1981 from Northern Natural Gas. And there is a main gas line running right here up to Giles. But the easement from 1981 was for like a whole quarter section. And you know, that just sometimes they did that and rather than writing legals. And so it gave the NRD the opportunity to build S6, this PL566 structure, over this whole quarter easement. Well, in April of 2021, we bought this whole piece. So what's labeled as subject property is the development adjacent. So this southern part we purchased from the owner. So we really currently own everything we need for the new project, and it also includes everything that would have been necessary to maintain the S6 project. So we really can release this kind of big blanket quarter section easement that was given to us from Northern Natural. So that's the easement release that's in front of you. The way that the release was written, it really just releases it for this subject property up here, so for that portion of it. So it covers for anything we have still. However, we shouldn't need it. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. We could have a motion.
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Bonnet?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Savinsky?
Yes.
Keith?
Yes.
Jefferson?
Aye. We're adjourned.
The time is 5:17. We'll call the FEL subcommittee to order. In Danny Begley's absence, Fred, would you fill in, please?
Sure.
And notification of the Open Meeting Act. It is posted in the rear, as stated in previous meetings this evening, with that quorum call.
Conley?
Here.
Bradley?
Here.
Davidson?
Here.
McCormick?
Here.
And Jefferson?
Here. Adoption of the agenda.
Move.
Roll call, please.
Bradley?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
And Chairperson?
Yes. Item 5, personal publication of a meeting notice. I have that before me. Moving on to item 6, review and recommendation of Douglas County buyout purchase agreement. Kathy Sorensen, executive session if needed, but we don't believe we need it. Lori?
So tonight we have additional purchases for the buyout programs as a result of the March 2019 flooding. This property is in Douglas County in King Lake. We have a grant from FEMA through the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program to cover 75% of the costs. The structure at 24509 Laurel Avenue was appraised at $110,000. FEMA did verify that Ms. Sorensen received no federal benefit after the 2019 flood, and so she is eligible for the full appraised amount, and she has accepted that offer, and we ask for your approval.
Just quick question.
Yes.
I received no federal benefits. Did she have, like, flood insurance on her own that she would have received, or does that look into that?
It looks into anything. They are required to disclose any insurance payments, charity payments, anything like that.
So she probably received nothing.
She received nothing.
Lori, not at this moment, but can you get me the name of the appraiser at some point?
Yes.
I appreciate it.
I have a question.
I'm sorry?
Was there also a requirement that flood insurance had to be carried on, or was that is that a different situation?
That's a different program. The flood mitigation assistance program does require that because it's funded out of flood insurance premiums.
Any further discussion?
I'm sorry, motion. I move that we accept staff recommendation.
Second.
Thank you very much. Any public comment? Further staff comment? Directors? Roll call.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley? Bradley?
Yes.
And
yes. Thank you. Item 7, review and recommendation of Washington County buyout purchase agreement, Murray property. Lori.
So this is the same situation. This is our Washington County grant. The property is owned by Robert K. Murray Revocable Living Trust and the Sandra L. Murray Revocable Living Trust. The appraised value is $65,000 for the home located at 450 North 2nd Street in Arlington. FEMA verified that they received no additional assistance, and so they are eligible for the full appraised value for this structure. And one thing to note, for the structures in Arlington, we do have an agreement with the village, and they will cover half of the local share for these.
Can we get a motion on the floor, please?
I move for staff recommendation.
Second.
Any comment, general public? Directors? Roll call.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Bradley?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
And Shepherdson?
Yes. Item 8, review the recommendation of land acquisition of Dam Site 12. We do need to go into executive session and to discuss this purchase, and would make a motion, would someone make a motion that we go into executive session, please?
So moved. Second.
Roll call.
Aye.
Bradley?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
And Shepherdson?
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen,
I'll second it.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Bradley?
Yes.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
And Shepherdson?
Yes. Well, you folks have pretty much heard the whole story. Do we have a motion for somebody wishes to make?
So moved.
Second.
Any further comments? Hearing none. Any comments from the general public? Not here. Roll call.
Davidson?
Yes.
McCormick?
Abstain.
Conley?
Aye.
Bradley?
Yes.
And Shepherdson?
Yes. That concludes our agenda. We stand adjourned at 5:37. Thank you.